From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Welcome to the Tuesday edition of Washington Watch. I'm not Tony Perkins. I'm Eben Fowler with Bot Radio Network, sitting in today for Tony. Great to have you along on this Tuesday afternoon. I have a great show planned for you. Planned Parenthood, America's largest abortion vendor, you know that, announced yesterday that it's officially dropped out of the Title X program and will forego nearly $60 million in taxpayer funding. I say that's a good start on the $500 million, $60 million. And they're doing that rather than complying with the Trump administration rule requiring that it separate its abortions from the rest of its operations. In just a moment, we will celebrate this victory with one of the Republican leaders in the House of Representatives, Congressman Ron Estes of Kansas. I'm sitting in the state of Kansas right now and glad to have him along. In the next segment, second segment, I'll talk with Mayra Rodriguez. She's a former Planned Parenthood director from Arizona who blew the whistle on the murder giant. She told authorities about the high complication rates for one doctor, the illegal conduct of the doctor, falsification of affidavits and patient records, incomplete abortions, and the failure to report a minor who had an adult partner. Getting into criminal territory there, aren't we? Well, a jury awarded this whistleblower a whopping $3 million. Mayra Rodriguez, who once oversaw three Arizona abortion mills, will join us in the second segment. At the bottom of the hour, I'll talk about a fascinating Wall Street Journal story about how company executives are not as committed to the bottom line as they once were. We'll talk economics here. As they become active advocates for liberal social causes, like the homosexual transgender agenda, for instance. Justin Danhoff is an attorney with the National Public Policy Research, and he's confronted many of these corporations in person at shareholder meetings, and he'll join me for that segment. And at 42 past the hour for the last segment, pastors and drag queens. You won't want to miss that. It'll be quite a segment indeed. A pastor was arrested at a Spokane, Washington library's Drag Queen Story Hour. We'll learn all about those. It's not the Dairy Queen Story Hour. That would be much better and more appropriate. And in that last segment, I'll talk with that pastor and Brad Dacus. Brad, we've talked with a number of times before. He's the president of a great organization, the Pacific Justice Institute. And we'll talk about what happened and the status of the court case, because Brad's organization is representing that pastor. Very, very important. Stay with us through that. And if we have time, we'll take your phone calls as well. Let's get started. Planned Parenthood, America's largest abortion vendor, announced yesterday it's officially dropped out of the Title X program, and it will forego nearly $60 million in taxpayer funding. That's your money and my money. Rather than comply with the Trump administration rule requiring that it separate its abortions from the rest of its operations. That's been going on for a long time, this whole thing with fungible assets, I think would be the term. Joining me here in just a moment to celebrate this victory against Planned Parenthood is Republican Congressman Ron Estes. He represents the 4th District of Kansas, and he serves on the House Ways and Means Committee. Well, prior to becoming an elected official, Representative Estes grew up on his family farm in Kansas. He went on to earn a degree in civil engineering and a graduate degree in business administration. He began his career in consulting and management roles for industries that included aerospace, energy, and manufacturing. And following his private sector career, Representative Estes served as fellow Kansans as Sedgwick County, Kansas treasurer, and then Kansas state treasurer. Congressman Estes, it's great to have you back right here on Washington Watch.
Well, thank you, Evan. It's great to be back here to be able to talk about this story.
Well, it's a great story. And tell us about this new rule, how it came to be. I think we've been trying to separate Planned Parenthood from about $500 million in taxpayer money for quite a while. The 60 million is a good start. So tell us about this new rule and how it works.
So really, yeah, that's so I was one of the members of Congress who helped lead a letter to Secretary Azar to help implement this rule. And we're calling it a new rule, but in reality, it's the old rule. It's the rule that President Reagan had put in effect. It was upheld by the Supreme Court, but President Clinton changed it. And basically what President Trump and Secretary Azar in Health and Human Services has done is re-implement that rule. And basically what it says is the law, when Title X was created in the 1970s, the law specifically said that abortion should not be used as a method of family planning, but that the federal government's going to provide money for family planning. And so the rule requires that if an organization takes Title X money to help with family planning, then they have to have, they could do abortions, but they have to have a completely separate facility, has to be physically different, has to be financially different. They have to make sure that they don't refer people to abortions at their facilities. And if there's suspected cases of sexual abuse, particularly of minors, they have to follow the state laws. So basically what the secretary is doing with this new ruling is putting that old rule, that true definition of what the law was, in place. And what Planned Parenthood has shown is that they'd rather make money off of abortions than they would to provide good family planning using federal funds.
Well, you know, in the last couple of years, it's really, and to the point you just made about Planned Parenthood, that it's become obvious that abortion is the number one deal that they're interested in because it's the one that makes the money. And of course, Congressman, you have seen the evidence that was unearthed regarding their sale of fetal body parts for various different things. And in fact, they're kind of in big trouble still, I think, for what they did in the past. Now, as you mentioned, this rule's been around for quite a while, and Planned Parenthood used to kind of hide behind saying, well, we keep that money separate from the abortion side. So is it just because we have a new administration that means what they say here that this rule's actually being enforced?
Well, it's actually good. The Secretary Azar had to go through and actually write the rules and regulations, put those back in place, go through the comment period, of which Planned Parenthood and some of their allies tried to drag the process down and slow it down with thousands of comments, and including Planned Parenthood's comment was 100 pages long, just to slow this whole process down. So it's had to be a step-by-step process. It's taken a couple of years to get through that effort to put this rule back in place. But it's really the whole intent of what the Title X funding was, to make sure that there's money for family planning. And we're going to continue to provide family planning money. There's not a reduction at all in the money. It's just that Planned Parenthood chose not to participate in providing those family planning services using Title X money.
Now, as I mentioned kind of at the beginning of this segment, talked about the fact that this represents somewhere in the realm of $60 million. And as many of our listeners know, Planned Parenthood actually has received somewhere up to close to $500 million in taxpayer money per year. What is the other $430 million? Where is that? What's the status of that money?
So that money comes through the Medicaid program, and so the clinics, the facilities that Planned Parenthood do operate, do provide some Medicaid services to individuals across the country. So it's being paid for through our Medicaid dollars from that standpoint. But we specifically were focused on the Title X funding because it was a clear violation of the law the way it was written in the 1970s. And the expectation is that federal funds ought to be used for family planning under the Title X concept. And we want to make sure that $60 million, what we really wanted was to make sure that the people still got their family planning support and their services, and the funding's still there. It's just that Planned Parenthood chose to go make money off of abortions than they did to provide family planning services.
Yeah, and this might be a little bit of a controversial question, but how did the government even get into the business of quote-unquote family planning in the first place?
So that's really a long-term aspect, thinking back in the early 70s, with particularly how do you support and provide assistance to low-income women in particular, and helping them with some of the medical information, some of the medical support around family planning services. And so it was really more from a health standpoint of making sure that pregnant women could maintain good quality health and understand some of the potential medical complications and medical issues they needed to address. So wanted to make sure that they could maintain their health.
Sure. Now, as I understand it, there are, Planned Parenthood talks about they have this sort of marketing campaign where they, in fact, they had these banners up, and I don't know what they're doing now, but they used to say, health care happens here. And, of course, we know that a lot of what they do is abortions. They hand out contraceptives to kids. They go out into schools. In fact, I know personally a lady. She works now for 40 Days for Life. She was a Planned Parenthood director up in Storm Lake, Iowa for a number of years, about 18 years. She used to go out into the schools and sort of carry the Planned Parenthood birth control, you're going to have sex anyway, so come see us so we can help you out story. And that's, there are a lot of other facilities and say, county health clinics and so forth that can provide true health care. Is that right? Versus what Planned Parenthood says they do.
There really are. There are lots of facilities around, whether it's county health facilities, whether it's some of the low-income and safety net clinics, whether it's, traditional doctor's offices that can help with some of those supports. Our intention is to make sure that family planning and support and health services are still provided. The funding's not being lowered. It's just that Planned Parenthood's chose to they're going to withdraw from that program because they make too much money off of abortion now.
Good for them. Yeah,
and one of the
let me ask you about specifically. There's one organization called the Obria Group. Are you familiar with them?
I'm not very familiar with them.
Okay. Well, they're an example of one of these other organizations and facilities that can provide health care to women, and they are actually pro-life clinics. So they are the exact opposite of Planned Parenthood. They would not think of doing abortions, but they're receiving about $5 million in Title X funds to do some of the things that Planned Parenthood says they do. Well, Marjorie Dannenfelser, she's president of the Susan B. Anthony List, which is a pro-life group, of course, explained this news that we're talking about today, Congressman. She said, today, Planned Parenthood showed its true colors by prioritizing abortion over family planning, refusing to comply with the Protect Life rule, and dropping out of the Title X program. So I assume that you would agree with her assessment there.
They really did show their true colors, and it's kind of sad. I really expected that they would probably create some other facilities and use for their abortion, providing abortions the way they did, and continue to take money from for the Title X if they really were wanting to legitimately provide health care and family planning services. But I guess they make too much money off of abortion, and they'd rather continue that route than provide good quality family planning with federal dollars.
Yeah, that definitely seems to be the case. Well, quickly, in about 30 seconds, what are the next steps in terms of things along these lines that you're hoping to accomplish, especially with respect to Planned Parenthood and receiving federal funds?
So this is a great first step of getting more family planning money out there that actually used legitimately for family planning. Obviously, one of the pieces that was in there that doesn't get talked about is making sure that sexual abuse of minors particularly doesn't happen. And that's one of the things we need to keep an eye out for in some of these abortion clinics.
Very good. Representative Ron Estes from Kansas, thanks so much for your time today. You're listening to Washington Watch. Eben Fowler with Bot Radio Network filling in for Tony Perkins. Coming up next, I'll talk with a former Planned Parenthood director who blew the whistle on Planned Parenthood. And we'll learn all about the stuff that she blew the whistle about.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy birthday, dear.
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
Are you concerned with the state of our nation? Do you want to protect and promote religious freedom, the sanctity of life, free speech, and our children's educations? Today we see a growing threat against our values on the news, on our college campuses, in our elementary schools, at our public libraries, and in our courts. Every year in Washington, D.C., thousands of conservatives attend FRC Action's Values Voters Summit. From October 11th to the 13th, come to our nation's capital to mingle with and hear from key conservatives who are bringing real change to Washington, D.C., and learn how you can too. FRC President Tony Perkins will be there, along with Ali Stuckey, Bill Bennett, Dana Lash, Oliver North, and U.S. House and Senate leaders. The 2020 elections are right around the corner, so this is one weekend you won't want to miss. We provide free scholarships for students. Register online at valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808. That's 1-877-372-2808.
Are you looking for timely and honest coverage of the latest news? Do you find it difficult to sort out what is true and what is false from the media? Family Research Council is here to help. FRC President Tony Perkins' daily Washington Update email newsletter addresses the most important current events affecting religious freedom, the protection of life, marriage and family, and more, not only in Washington, but around the world. The Washington Update's daily articles cover a range of topics, from underreported stories about transgender activists' efforts to infiltrate our schools to updates on court cases fighting for religious freedom, parental rights, and the protection of life. Don't miss this critical, in-depth analysis of the day's most essential stories that are shaping our nation's future. Learn more and subscribe by visiting frc.org/update. Again, that's frc.org/update.
Welcome back to Washington Watch, the Tuesday edition. Eben Fowler sitting in today for Tony Perkins, and glad to have you listening today. Before I forget it, the topic we're just about ready to get into sounds an awful lot like a story I think many of you have heard, and it was represented in a film called Unplanned. It's the story of Abby Johnson and her experience as a Planned Parenthood director. That film was just released this week on DVD and Blu-ray, and if you'd like to get a copy that you can show to friends, family, perhaps at your church, share with your pastor, you can go to botradionetwork.com/unplanned, botradionetwork.com/unplanned. It's a really important film. It has helped to turn the corner on public opinion with respect to the abortion issue as well as Planned Parenthood. Well, Mayrud Rodriguez, a former Planned Parenthood director, blew the whistle on Planned Parenthood. She told authorities about the, quote, high complication rates for one doctor, the illegal conduct of the doctor, falsification of affidavits and patient records, incomplete abortions, and the failure to report a minor who had an adult partner. A jury awarded Mayra a whopping $3 million. Joining me now to share her remarkable story is Mayra Rodriguez. Mayra, welcome to Washington Watch. Glad to have you here.
Hi, thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, tell us the story. First of all, tell us what you did for Planned Parenthood, and tell us about those facilities.
Well, I worked for Planned Parenthood for 17 years in the state of Arizona. I was the director for three of their clinics from like 2011 to 2017. My last few months in the agency were the abortion clinic, which is the busiest abortion clinic in the state of Arizona. And I joined that clinic in November of 2016. So soon after that, I started noticing a trend with a specific doctor, you know, and then I was kind of sit and wait to see if maybe it was just kind of like just an episode or, and then, but no, later as time went by, towards the summer, I started noticing more complications rate with him than any other doctor I have ever worked with. You know, the way he practiced, you know, his charting, not being accurate, and I literally start bumping heads with him about it. And, well, here we are.
So Planned Parenthood dismissed you, or they fired you. Is that right?
That's correct. On October 3rd of 2017, I was calling for a pre-scheduled meeting, and I was let go.
Now, didn't you receive some kind of an award from Planned Parenthood?
Correct. On about September of 2016, I was awarded the Employee of the Year. It was the very first time they did that, and I won that with all the employees. You know, everybody got in the poll, and then they picked me. So,
and what? Why did they give you that award? What was? What did it take to win that?
So the award had to do with being the core values of the agency, the person that met the core values, and then amongst the co-workers, you know, my peers, they choose a name, and whoever got more votes about it and the reasons why, it was me. So I remember one of the quotes for one person that nominated me said, because she's always willing to help anyone in any department. So, and that's one of the reasons. I had made that clinic at the Northeast Phoenix very successful, you know, and it was a Title 10 clinic, and the numbers and I had the numbers that were projected from that clinic, and all the complaints from patients had dropped significantly. I was able to hold on to staff. So it was just more about making the clinic successful, too.
Now, did Planned Parenthood, was their goal to increase the number of abortions at any point during the time you worked there? Was that something that they emphasized?
Yes, unfortunately, they did. I remember through my time at the Glendale location, which was from November of 2016 through October of 2017, that clinic was only doing abortions, and I pushed a lot to get nurse practitioners so we will do more than abortions. You know, that was the mainly goal of the clinic. It was the biggest abortion clinic in the state of Arizona. So my request for having a practitioner didn't go very far.
You know, that story really sounds familiar. It sounds a lot like Abby Johnson. Now, you know Abby, and you made connection with her, didn't you?
Yes, a few months ago, I made a connection with her, like a couple months ago. And then, I watched her movie on Plan, and I'm like, deja vu. You know, so
yeah.
It's my life. The stories are very similar. I'm sure we're not the only ones, you know. After 17 years, it saddens me, of course. You know, I really, truly had believed in the mission all the time that I was there. So, you know, it has been a very sad time for me.
Yeah. So do you consider yourself pro-life now?
Well, right now, at the moment, I don't want to lose the focus on what I'm trying to do here, so that it's to create consciousness about the safety of women, you know, and in a way, you know, to show the employees that they can come forward, you know, that they see something going wrong. They can actually come forward. They don't have to be afraid. You know, I was not going to let it go when that happened to me, because I knew what it was going on. And, you know, I thought, if I let it go and things keep going the same direction, it could be my daughter, my niece, my friend's daughter, anybody, you know, and I'm not going to let it go.
Yeah, so what would you say, and we have about 30 seconds here, Myra, what would you say were the most egregious violations that you reported, particularly with respect to this one doctor?
Well, it was the charting, you know, not appropriately charting, not telling the patient what actually happened to her in the room. That was the shocking part. That was the last drop to me. It was when I basically, I'm like, this is it, you know, this cannot go on like this. You know, that was it, you know, not charting appropriately, not charting accurately, and not letting the patient know what happened in the room.
Right. Well, Myra Rodriguez, thank you so much for your time today and for telling us your story. Again, sounds an awful lot like that of Abby Johnson. And again, the film Unplanned is available now on DVD. If you have not seen it, I highly, highly recommend it. You can get a copy at botradionetwork.com/unplanned. Well, you're listening to Washington Watch. Eben Fowler sitting in for Tony Perkins. Coming up next, we'll talk about a fascinating Wall Street Journal story about how company executives are not as committed to the bottom line as they once were, as they become active advocates for liberal social causes.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood was using taxpayer dollars to perform abortions? Recently, the Trump administration made changes to a healthcare policy called Title 10. The changes to this policy now eliminate the loopholes organizations like Planned Parenthood were using to receive taxpayer funding for abortions. Planned Parenthood was hiding behind terms like reproductive health care and services like cancer screenings and contraception distribution, while in reality, they were making money off of abortions. This shift in funding will benefit community health centers that provide needy families with family planning resources and health services, regardless of their ability to pay. It will also benefit pregnancy resource centers that provide care and free resources to women who may be experiencing an unplanned pregnancy. This policy decision is the right move to help and protect American lives. To learn more, visit frc.org/Title 10. That's frc.org/Title 10.
Hi, my name is Bailey. I am serving as an intern at Family Research Council, and it has been a life-changing experience. Interns join FRC's team of experts as they embark upon the mission of advancing faith, family, and freedom in public policy and the culture from a biblical worldview. The FRC internship is a 12 to 15 week program designed to educate and inspire university students who are passionate about public service and who believe that a biblical worldview is fundamental to the reformation of government and culture. As interns, we receive the opportunity to work alongside and be personally and professionally developed by FRC's team of experts. This paid internship offers free housing in the heart of DC, which allows us to be fully immersed in the fast-paced political climate and to build a community with other faithful conservatives in our nation's capital. For more information and to apply, visit frc.org/internships. That's frc.org/internships.
You're listening to Washington Watch. Eben Fowler sitting in for Tony Perkins today. I'm here at the headquarters of Bot Radio Network, and I'm glad to have you along. Glad you're listening. We have a couple great segments still coming up here in the last half of the broadcast. You can go to TonyPerkins.com if you want to listen back to any of these broadcasts or get additional information. There's a more resources area that you can find for each day's broadcast if you want to dig into more information. That's TonyPerkins.com. All right. Well, according to the Wall Street Journal, the leaders of some of America's biggest companies are chipping away at the long-held notion that corporate decision-making should revolve around what is best for shareholders. What a novel idea. The Business Roundtable on Monday changed its statement of the purpose of a corporation. No longer, they say, should decisions be based solely on whether they'll yield higher profits for shareholders. Rather, corporate leaders should take into account all stakeholders, that is, employees, customers, and society writ large. Sounds good on its face, and maybe there's some aspects of it that are. We're going to dig into that here in this segment. But it is a major philosophical shift for the association, which counts on chief executives of dozens of the biggest U.S. companies as its members. Joining me with his analysis is Justin Danhoff. He's an attorney with a National Public Policy Research. Justin, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Evan. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, so tell us what the definition was, or kind of what the standard was, and what they are suggesting it should be, and then we'll talk about why this is good, bad, or indifferent.
Sure. So let's note, first of all, that the legal obligation of these companies has not changed. Legally, the boards of directors and the CEOs have fiduciary responsibilities to their shareholders. They do not have a legal fiduciary responsibility to stakeholders. So that aspect has remained the same. However, what this message coming down from the Business Roundtable's leadership is saying is that they are expanding the definition of shareholder and changing it to stakeholder. So it's no longer their focus, they're saying, to focus on fiduciary responsibility. They are expanding that into essentially anybody that cares about the company, thinks about the company, the community, the environment, social issues. But what this really all is a mask for is what's been going on in corporate America in large publicly traded companies for the better part of the last two decades. And this is a push to advance cultural liberal positions through corporate America. I often say you do not need to change a law to change culture, because you can change corporate decision making and corporate action, and it will have the very same effect.
You know, it seems like Target is maybe a good example of this, where their CEO or their president, whoever it is that leads that organization, thought it was more important to have, non-gendered bathrooms and non-gendered dressing areas and that sort of thing. And a lot of people stopped going to Target, myself included, because they care more about that kind of crazy stuff than they do about the safety of particularly of women and young girls. Is that a good example of what we're talking about here? Because their stock dropped a bit after that word got out.
Well, it's a great example of no longer caring about your bottom line and instead pushing a progressive agenda. And there's a couple reasons for it, but the first and most important one is, Target's stock did drop for a while, but it's gone back up. Conservatives are not really very well coordinated when it comes to boycotting. What we need to do more of is engagement with these corporate leaders so they hear from us, in the same way that liberal activists engage with corporate leaders. Another example is you can go across industry. But, of course, Nike decides to pull a tribute shoe to Betsy Ross, right?
Oh, that was dumb.
The Betsy Ross flag.
Yeah, that was dumb.
But, again, they're doing so because they don't think conservatives are going to do anything in a coordinated effort about it. And so the other problem here is that some of these corporations that seem to want to do the actual right thing, they may be trying to blunt off a socialist leader in the future, right? There are certain presidential candidates that have, already openly talked about the road towards socialism and breaking up companies, and that they would try and legally redefine the way that these companies have to engage with stakeholders. And so they may be trying to get out ahead of that, but I think what the Business Roundtable just did was actually give those politicians and the liberal activists rope to hang these companies with. Because once you stake out what your new policy is, then anytime you try and do something that reduces regulatory burdens on companies, which is still part of the Business Roundtable's mission, right? They're going to come back and say, no, no, no. For example, you must join the Paris Climate Accord even if the U.S. pulls out, because you said the environment was one of your stakeholders. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm,
so they just
sure.
set themselves up to get tripped up by the activists and the politicians going forward. This was very short-sighted thinking. It sounds flowery. It sounds like it makes common sense. But in the end, they really just handed a tool to the activists that already want to dictate corporate behavior to start with to leverage their decision-making in the future. So I think this was a really big mistake by the Business Roundtable. I'm proud of the seven corporate leaders that decided not to sign on to this nonsense as members of the BRT. But I am afraid they've set up a worse future, not a better one.
Justin Danhof, attorney with the National Public Policy Research, thanks for filling us in on that. This is something to keep an eye on for sure. You're listening to Washington Watch. Coming up next, a pastor was arrested in Spokane, Washington, a library drag queen story hour. I'll be talking with that pastor and Brad Dacus with Pacific Justice Institute, who is representing him. This is a very, very important story. Stay with us right back after the break.
We live in a time of great political division, and this division only intensifies during campaign season. The toxic tone in politics can be discouraging, which makes it a very real temptation for many Christians to wipe their hands of politics altogether. After all, if God is sovereign and controls the heart of the king, as Proverbs says, do we really need to get involved in the messy world of politics? Because political engagement can be divisive, shouldn't Christians abandon politics and direct their energies toward more spiritual pursuits? Christians are called to submit every area of their life to God, which includes how they engage in politics. But they are called to engage biblically. This requires Christians to be prepared to follow their political theology to its logical end and vote for candidates and parties that support clear biblical values. For more information on the Christians' call to engage in politics, visit frc.org/engage. That's frc.org/engage.
Radical abortion laws in New York, Illinois, and Vermont are challenging the sanctity of life. These laws have lifted the few existing restrictions on abortion in the name of family planning and mental health of pregnant mothers. Americans need to take a stand and defend the rights of the unborn. Family Research Council is sending Congress 90,000 baby hats as a reminder that babies should be welcomed with love and warmth, not potential danger. Supporters have already funded over 45,000 hats. We are over halfway there. Join Americans across the nation and donate $9 to send a powerful reminder that young lives need to be cherished. When you take action, we'll send you an end birthday abortion certificate that will remind you to pray for born alive babies who are facing the danger of being killed outside the womb. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com for more information. That's endbirthdayabortion.com.
Hello, this is Tony Perkins, President of the Family Research Council here in Washington, D.C., and I would like to invite you to join my wife, Luana, and I, along with Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin and former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann, for FRC's Israel Tour, June the 2nd through the 12th, 2020. Whether you're sailing on the Sea of Galilee, standing in the ruins of Capernaum, or journeying up to Jerusalem, Israel is unlike any other place on earth. You'll relive the final earthly days of Jesus as you pray in the Garden of Gethsemane. You look upon Golgotha and stand in the Garden Tomb. The reality of his story will come alive in a transformative way. This one-of-a-kind tour will not only allow you to explore the land of the Bible and the roots of our Christian faith, you'll also hear firsthand from some of Israel's political, defense, and religious leaders. Join us June the 2nd through June the 12th for this life-changing experience. For more information, visit TonyPerkins.com or call 844-872-5155.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. Evan Fowler with Bot Radio Network sitting in today for Tony Perkins on the Tuesday edition of this program, Washington Watch. No doubt you've heard that taxpayer-funded libraries across the country are betraying the trust of parents by hosting drag queen story hours, of all things, where parents bring their impressionable children to listen to men dressed up as women reading books. I mean, it's kind of nutty when you think about it. It's just odd, okay? It's perversion through and through is what it really is. Well, Pastor Afshin Yagtin from Spokane, Washington, decided to take a stand outside a library and preach to those who were coming and going during the drag queen story hour, bringing biblical truth to bear on the outrageous event going on inside. Joining me now is Pastor Yagtin, who will share his story, and will also be joined by Brad Dacus, president of the Pacific Justice Institute, and they're representing Pastor Yagtin in this situation. Gentlemen, welcome to Washington Watch. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Hi, great to be on. Thank you.
Well, let's start out. Pastor Yagtin, first of all, tell us, we'll have you on here for the first portion of this segment. I want you to tell us your story. Tell us what happened and how did you end up outside this library? What made you decide to do that?
Absolutely. So, you know, we found out just maybe a week or two before that for the first time in Spokane, Washington history, that the drag queens were coming to read stories to our children. And I just felt compelled to do something, anything, at least just to show up and be a presence for the Lord and just be available to God's leading. And I was prevented from acting out my vocation as a pastor and ministering in that event. So that's the short of it.
Uh-huh. Okay. So what did you do? Just take us there to that day. What happened? What did you do?
Well, I was immediately blockaded by the Spokane Police Department, and they were demanding that anybody who disagreed with the drag queens to move across the street, and not only on the public sidewalk next to the library, but on the other side of the street, far removed from the event, where obviously it would just be ceremonial. There would be no opportunity to actually make our voices heard or to, you know, minister to anybody inside. And so I was blocked from entering a public library.
It sounds kind of like a buffer zone around an abortion clinic when sidewalk counselors are trying to talk to the women going inside, doesn't it?
Very much so, and even more extreme in the sense that it wasn't, you know, even the public sidewalk next to it was disallowed. So, yeah, very much so, though.
Did you have an opportunity to talk with any of the people who were going into this event?
No, unfortunately, you know, that was, you know, I wanted to go in and perhaps just at least pray for those kids going in. I was going to be discreet and, you know, not scare the children by being loud or anything like that. I just wanted to maybe tell them that Jesus loves them, pray for them, and just follow the leading of the Spirit to see what God would want me to do at that point. And within 10 minutes of being there, I was handcuffed and taken away, you know, immediately.
Well, first of all, that's absurd. Second of all, you know, shame on the parents who would take their children to see something like this. Why were you arrested?
Well, because I was, in essence, I was trying to exert my First Amendment right. And as a Spokane resident and U.S. citizen, I wanted to enter the public library. And they basically said that I'm obstructing or I'm getting, they didn't use the word obstructing, but that was the charge afterwards. And they basically said that if you don't move across the street, you will be arrested immediately. And another thing that is noteworthy is that they had snipers positioned on the roof pointed our way. And I didn't know that at the time, but apparently my life was potentially in danger as well. They just said, if you don't comply with our commands, you will be arrested.
Okay, I want to switch to Brad now for just a couple of minutes. And Greg, if you can maybe bring Pastor's line down just a little bit. We're getting some background noise. Brad, so from your perspective, how did you get involved in this in terms of representing the pastor?
The pastor contacted us at Pacific Justice Institute and requested representation. We at Pacific Justice Institute handle cases like this all across the country where people are being persecuted or criminally prosecuted, as in this case, simply for their beliefs or wanting to publicly share their beliefs. This case is sort of interesting. It's even more extreme because this pastor has done nothing to obstruct the order of things. Wasn't yelling, wasn't arguing, didn't have a big sign. He just simply wanted to go in and observe and pray for those kids being influenced. It was because of his viewpoint and because of his biblical worldview viewpoint that he was being singled out and treated differently at a public place, a pub that was open to the public, in terms of the event that was being held there. So as far as we're concerned, this is a major violation by the government of his First Amendment rights and to be treated equally and have the same opportunity and not be treated differently because of his beliefs.
Brad, I've got a bunch more questions, but let me just pop in here for a second, let our listeners know if they'd like to jump on the line here in a couple of minutes and ask questions about this. The number is 866 372-7234, 866-372-7234. So, Brad, a couple of things that I read about this story, and then in talking with Pastor here just a moment ago, in your discovery thus far, has there been any determination? I mean, it kind of sounds like the police department, and normally police departments are supposed to be completely neutral in these things, enforce the laws. Is there any sense that somebody is from higher up, perhaps in the government in Spokane, is asking them to lean in favor of the drag queens here, to put it bluntly?
Yeah, that's exactly what we see here, because those, you know, SWAT policemen, I call them SWAT, but, you know, they're up there with their sharpshooting, you know, guns, and they're, you know, they weren't there to protect the pastors and concerned parents. They were there focused on the pastors and concerned parents. They were being treated differently, specifically because of their beliefs, not because they were creating a disturbance. Once again, this pastor, he did not do anything to create a disturbance, to connotate that he intended to create a disturbance. He simply made it. He was asked his what his perspective was. He gave it, and because of that, he was not allowed in. This is a public library. It's a public event. The public was invited. And that the fact that it came down this way should be very disturbing to people who want a government that is neutral and not hostile towards people with a biblical worldview.
Okay, Brad, you know, your organization works with people all across the country. We're talking about a specific incident in Spokane, but are you seeing similar situations popping up in other parts of the country?
Well, yeah. In fact, specifically, these drag queen story hours, they're happening all over the place. Many parents, you know, may be dropping their children off unaware of what their children are going to be exposed to. And the messaging of these drag queen story hours is, it's very orchestrated. It's very contemplated out. And that is to numb children to seeing that there's nothing wrong with a man dressing like a woman, acting like a woman, and proposing the things that are discussed and made available of a sexual nature by such entities, such groups. So it's very disturbing. It's national. And we at Pacific Justice, this is not the first thing time we're dealing with it. We have other ones we're dealing with. And parents need to know what their rights are. We're making those available on our website at pacificjustice.org.
And Brad and Pastor, I want to bring in one of our listeners, Derek, line 4 from Ohio. Derek, welcome to Washington Watch. What are your thoughts on this?
I just was listening and wanted to thank the pastor so much for all his work and for any difficulties that he's going through because of, you know, his work, and wish that God bless him.
Yeah, I completely
agree. Up.
Yeah, Derek, thank you so much, Pastor. So, what's it been like since the situation happened? What's going on in your life with respect to this?
Well, you know, first of all, I appreciate the prayers, and there has been national outpouring of support and many pastors calling me from all over the country, just, you know, thanking me for taking a stand. And, you know, I mean, life kind of goes on as normal. It's kind of interesting that people recognize me, you know, from being on the news, and, you know, you never know, some good, some bad. So it does kind of change your viewpoint and your understanding of life to some degree, and just being shocked that, you know, a pastor would be arrested for trying to protect children rather than the other way around, rather than, you know, somebody who is coming in with the idea of changing those children's minds about the normal biblical godly family, you know. So it's been an eye-opening experience for certain.
Pastor, you know, you don't sound like a radical or a rabble-rouser. Just from the sound of your voice, you're very calm, and you sound like, you know, the peace of God dwells in your heart. And what would you say to other pastors? I mean, you know, again, you don't sound like a radical, but You had enough courage to go out and stand on that sidewalk. What's your message to other pastors with respect to these kinds of situations?
Great question, because it's very important, very needed for pastors to speak up from behind the pulpit. There's a lot of silence on these kinds of issues, whether it comes to abortion or the LGBT. And we also need pastors out in the front lines. You know, we wouldn't be in this situation that we are today culturally if the churches, if the Christians, if the pastors had spoken up, you know, decades ago. And that's what we need more than anything, is for pastors to step up and lead, you know, and take a stand for the Word of God.
That's right. And Brad, you know, we were just talking about the importance of pastors to speak out and, you know, to do it prayerfully and carefully. And that's what Pastor did here, and he got arrested. So what's the status of his case? Where is it heading?
Well, he is being criminally prosecuted. About 30% of our cases now at Pacific Justice are now criminal defense cases. That we're dealing with, unfortunately, because of people like this pastor being criminally prosecuted. So initially, I think it's important people to note, he had to sit in a squad car for over 3 hours. It's like a mini jail. For over 3 hours before they took him down to book him at the jail. And now he's got these charges pending. We have a attorney there in our Seattle office who's taken on this case, Jorge Ramos, who's a fantastic attorney. We're defending him, of course, without charge, like we never charge for our work. And we're very busy. We have women in a similar incident that have were forced to leave for the same reason, because they weren't supported. They could tell that they weren't supported. They weren't creating a service. So this is the trend line that we're seeing carrying it out, this kind of intimidation. That's why it's so important that we make sure people like this pastor are fully defended and acquitted from the criminal charges that are brought against him.
Yeah, when do you think this decision is going to be made? What's our timeline on this case? That's often hard to tell, but what do you think?
It is hard to tell. I had a pastor I was defending myself out of Texas, El Paso, Texas. It took 9 months. It went to trial, and the charges were dropped the morning of the trial. So I don't know how long this is going to take, but people need to understand, when you have criminal charges pending against you, and the longer the time that's pending against you, it's stressful. It's limiting. Sometimes you can't travel while you have pending criminal charges. So it's going to pay. It's a toll that he has to pay for this, and that's why we're trying to get the charges dropped. We've made our motions. We have a pending motion for that. But it's not always that easy as you would think. Given the changes that we have in our society in places like the state of Washington.
Yeah. Have you thought about or is it in the plan possibly to sue the city or the police department for at least for legal costs?
Yeah, that's a good question. The general rule is for criminal defense, there's not that kind of protection. So we have to absorb that no matter how unjust the criminal prosecution. As far as a civil lawsuit, a civil lawsuit can be filed with regard to his violation of his civil rights, civil liberties. But the reality is you have to basically show a pattern. And what a pattern is apparently developing potentially in that area, we have another city. I can't announce it now, but we're preparing to file a civil lawsuit because of their repeated attacks on people sharing the gospel in public places. But generally speaking, you have to show a pattern, not just one time or even two times. That's just what the case law has with regards to viability of a civil lawsuit.
Well, Brad Dacus with Pacific Justice Institute, Pastor Afshin Yagtin, thank you for the work that you're doing. It's important across the country. You know, parents need to be alert as to what's going on in their libraries. And if one of these things is popping up, you need to call the library. You need to call the board of the library and let them know this will not stand. Well, that's all the time we have today. Eben Fowler, again, sitting in today for Tony Perkins. So glad you joined us. Thanks for coming along. And those who called and were not able to get in, sorry, we're not able able to get you on the program, but we appreciate you listening today. So God bless. Have a great day.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.